What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Episode 4 of Meet Me at Mutual. Daniel Shoptoff from C70 at the Bat. John Nagel from Cardinals Farm Fame. You know, we just did this earlier in the week. We're recording this Friday night. And so it's not been too long since you've heard us, but here we are again. John, you doing all right tonight?
I'm doing all right, Daniel. How about yourself?
Doing well. Doing well. And looking forward, there's some interesting topics for us to talk about. Because a lot of frustrating topics and things of that nature, because that's the way the nature of this team this year. So let's just get started with the Redbird Rewind.
He's got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
All right. Again, like we said, we were here Monday night. We talked a little bit at the end about the Cardinals' come-from-behind win against the Cubs, 4-3 on a pair of significant home runs. The next night was not that kind of game, lost 12-3. Then there's the dramatic Wednesday game where they get down, 6-1 to Jake Arrieta and almost pull it out, lose 8-9. Then they go out to Washington, lose a 2-1 game last night, and then win against Max Scherzer tonight, on the basis of a Stephen Piscotty grand slam, for the most part, win 6-2. So the Cardinals, since we've talked, they're basically 1-3. Again, one game over 500. Still a frustrating thing, but let's talk a little bit about it. There's been a couple of interesting games. Let's talk somewhat about that Wednesday game. When you're down 5 runs to Jake Arrieta, you usually call that a ball game. So I guess if you're going to take anything, That's something to take out of that game.
Yeah, and you know, if I'm not mistaken, they've had a little bit of success against him in the past. And you know, I don't think, you know, they're major league hitters, they're professionals. I don't think they get too intimidated with the guy that's on the mound. So I mean, you know, it was nice to see that they could string together some runs against someone who's been, you know, incredible this season. You know, I think we're to the point where we're not going to take any moral victories, you know, because we need to win some games, especially against good opponents. But I guess that was, you know, I guess that's something out of nothing, you know.
Yeah, you're right. The Cardinals, I mean, everybody puts this stretch of Jake Arrieta's been dominant, been awesome for so long, and it's true, but they tend to ignore the postseason games. This weren't, and one of those, the Cardinals, you know, I don't think they beat Arrieta in that series, but they definitely put 3 or 4 runs up on him. So it's not, yeah, there wasn't an there was not an overly intimidated factor, but, you know, nobody else has been able to hit him very much. So to see this team, which we have seen shut down against good pitching, to be able to do that, not only to do that on Wednesday night, but then tonight against Scherzer, although, you know, and I guess if you want to play devil's advocate, they didn't do a whole lot against Scherzer. They just did it all at one spot.
Right.
And thankfully, that was all that mattered. We saw a good game out of Jaime Garcia tonight, which helps soothe some stomachs as well. You know, the rotation has been such a shambles over the last week or so, and Garcia's been part of that. But to get another good start out of Leak last night, even though he didn't win, and then a good start out of Garcia, that makes us a little bit more comfortable, I guess.
Right, and two quality starts in a row, and you know, hopefully we can string together some more. We're getting to the, you know, to the kind of the tougher part of the rotation that's had the struggles. So we'll see if they can do some, you know, they can bounce back a little bit. But, you know, take it one game at a time. We got two good starts in a row, so we'll see if we can keep it going.
Absolutely. And, you know, this pitching rotation is not going to get any easier when you, like you said, ours are struggling, you run into a Nationals team that doesn't really have a whole lot of weak spots there.
Right.
And you'll have to face them. We talked on Monday, I think we wanted to see this team go 4-3 through this stretch at best. I mean, obviously we wanted to go 7-0. That wasn't going to happen. But, you know, if you got a 4-3 out of two, which the two teams that are probably the class of the National League this year.
Yeah.
You know, so far they're 2-3. It's going to take a sweep this weekend to get to that. But even if they split Saturday and Sunday and go 3-4, it could have been a whole lot worse.
Right. Yeah, it could have. And you take that Wednesday night game, and again, I mean, we're not into moral victories, but, you know, they fought until the end there. And, you know, beating Scherzer on Friday tonight, you know, hopefully. And you know, I feel like after, what game was it, Monday, you know, when Matheny said, you know, maybe this win would be the one that, and obviously it hasn't quite done that, but, you know, maybe beating Scherzer, maybe, you know, getting to Arrieta a little bit, maybe, who knows, Daniel.
Yeah. It feels like for this team, and I don't say that just for this year, but over the last few years, there has not been any momentum.
Right.
This is a team that will go out and win a big game like we saw Monday night, and then almost immediately drop the next one or two or lose three or four, whatever. But, you know, on the flip side of that, they don't tend to, you know, have long losing streaks either.
Right.
I don't know I don't know what that means, except that it's a frustrating team, and maybe it has a frustrating DNA right now. Because, like I said, this runs back two or three years. Even last year, winning 100 games, they never seemed to put on a huge run where they just were winning all the time.
Right, and you know, I think part of the thing with the avoiding the losing streaks is, you know, in the past we've had, you know, enough quality starters that could stop a losing streak. And, you know, I don't know if we have somebody right now, a stopper, you might call it. I don't know. So we'll see if somebody can step up.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's getting to the point, and we're hitting that quarter mark. You know, Labor Day's or Memorial Day is one of those times where you really take stock of your team and see where you're at. You kind of feel like that's the team you're going to have. And if that's the case, you know, we're going to run into Memorial Day pretty close to 500. You'd like to think that there's a kick in this team. We've seen the Cardinals over the past few years, or at least in times of the past few years, you know, kind of muddle through and then hit a second half that's a really strong and push their way either into contention or into a significant lead. I guess it's still possible, but it still feels like there's going to take some sort of shakeup for this team to really catch fire.
Yeah, I would agree. We've 500 balls what we've been at, you know, through the first, you know, almost 2 months, and I don't see much changing right now. And so you're right. I think something needs to change for the record to change.
Yeah. Well, like I said, that was the short week that was, and the big issue again, starting pitching, we're going to focus a little bit on one particular pitcher here in our next segment, Up the Middle.
Alessia, the second for one, the double play. What a double play by Ozzie Smith. Oh, mercy.
All right. The one game, well, two games, because Carlos Martinez didn't pitch very well on Wednesday night. The Cardinals just kind of came back and balanced, you know, fought back. But the real game that was ugly this week was the Tuesday night game against the Cubs, where Michael Wacha started and allowed 6 runs before the Cardinals even had a chance to bat. Unfortunately, this has become a trend for Michael Wacha. For the last 3 games, he has gone 4 innings, or 4-plus as he did in this one, not recording any outs, and given up at least 6 runs in each game, although some of those were unearned runs. You know, if you had 3 of those kind of games throughout the year, it's still a little troublesome. But to have 3 consecutive games like that, that makes you wonder what is really wrong with Michael Wacha.
Yeah, and you know, I heard Derek Gould talk about this maybe it was after his last start, I don't remember, but and he was talking about his timing, and how important his timing is when he's on the mound. And you know, his timing, you know, having the proper timing leads to, you know, his tilt and his mechanics, and then the tilt leads to the nasty change up, and none of that's happening. And so I think, you know, he's just off. And, you know, I did a little research on him, and, you know, obviously he hasn't pitched well, but he's also been pretty unlucky in that, when he gets runners on base, more times than not, those runners are scoring. In fact, at a league high level, I looked it up, and I use FanGraphs, and that's an awesome website for you guys out there, but he's fourth worst in the major leagues in letting runners on base score. It's called left on base percent, fourth worst. And that tends to inflate your ERA a little bit. And typically when pitchers have low left on base percents, it's because they're not striking out guys. Well, he's about over 7 strikeouts per 9 innings, which is about where he sits. So he's, you know, and I'm not saying that's the reason at all. He's got some big time problems, but it was just interesting to see. And, you know, I kind of looked back at his changeup usage and his pitch usage from years past, and he's about the same. So I'm guessing he's not executing.
That would seem to be fair. Yeah, I kind of pulled up here brooksbaseball.net because it's one of the few places that I know that has a lot of the, you know,
that's stuff. Another good resource,
yeah,
too, for pitchers.
I actually don't know what I'm looking at, but it's kind of interesting stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, but just glancing at this, if you look at it through the last 4 years, it doesn't seem like there's a significant. You can't point to the fact that his fastball's 3 miles an hour slower or anything like that. So it is difficult to think, though, that it's, you know, and it's obviously not all luck. Like you say, he's just not executing, too. But you wonder how much, you know, what's the mix? You know, what does he need to do? It's kind of funny because, you know, the last 2 years, there has been a, you know, a huge parade to run John Mabry out of town.
Right.
But we're seeing results from Walker and from Martinez and some of the other starters, and there's very little push to have a new pitching coach. I'm sure that will come, but, you know, is there something that Lillequist needs to do with him?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, I'm sure that they're, you know, in between starts, they're analyzing things, and they're, you know, in the side sessions, they're working out some things, and you know, I think it's too early to decide, you know, to make some, you know, make some calls on things. But yeah, I mean, that's a good question. How much are they doing, you know, behind the scenes? And I'm sure they are. And you know, I'm sure as frustrated as we are with the results.
Yeah. I'm kind of, the only thing I'm seeing here is I've just pulled up a different graph here on Brooks Baseball. That's a little bit maybe interesting is that, over the past 4 years, Michael Wacha's percentage of throwing hard stuff has continued to increase, while his breaking stuff especially is down. And maybe that's somewhat a different. I mean, when Michael Wacha came up, he was a fastball changeup guy. I mean, the changeup is his big bread and butter, but if he's not able to control it, which has been an issue for him in the past, you got to throw the fastball and people can hit it more.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's kind of what Derek Gould was referencing it all starts with a change up for him. And you're right, if he can't get that change up over and kind of, you know, keep the hitters off balance, then they're not going to be, you know, they're going to be sitting on the fastball and they're going to be able to make good contact on it.
Yeah. And, you know, it looks like they're getting more line drives off the hard stuff, which again, probably has a little bit of luck factor in there as well. I mean, obviously they're hitting his balls harder, but maybe he can kind of, you know, if he can get a few more ground balls and a few less, you know, balls hit at people, or maybe at them instead of taking their heads off, we can settle in. So what do you think? I mean, just, you know, personally, do you think he's going to be able to turn this corner, or, you know, what happens if he doesn't?
And we've talked about the lack of depth in the minor league system, and I don't think there's really another option right now. I think we're gonna have to have him work through it. You know, now if he keeps, you know, 5 or 6 runs every time, then obviously, at least maybe for the mental side of it, give him a break. And I don't know, send him down for a few starts. I mean, there's, You know, there's been pitchers with better track records than him that have been sent down just to kind of get things right. Mm-hmm. And so maybe, you know, if things keep going the way they are, you know, maybe that's necessary. You know, I tend to believe that he's going to figure things out and he's going to get back on. I mean, he's been so dominant in the past. We've seen, you know, in the playoffs, you know, a couple of years ago, I mean, incredible stuff. So we know it's there. And you know, I guess maybe I'm an optimist too much, but I, you know, I think he can get back to it.
And I hope so. And I think you're probably right. I mean, he's young. Yeah. There people do this. I mean, we still remember, you know, Roy Halladay being sent all the way back to single A at one point in his career before coming back and being that dominant pitcher. But, you know, you factor in, I mean, some of this is not just this year. That stretch down, you know, the second half last year was kind of scary as well.
I think they said, I'm trying to remember now, and I don't have my computer in front of me, but maybe from September on, you know, including the playoffs and ERA, like in the sixes, maybe? I don't know. I mean, it's been a long stretch that hasn't been good, and so that is concerning.
Yeah, his regular season last year, in the regular season, not counting the playoffs, which weren't much better, his ERA in September was almost 8.
Yeah.
And then you factor in this year where he's, you know, getting close to 6, if not more. And again, you know, being that he's had the shoulder issue before, you know, part of me wonders if it's some sort of mechanic thing that he's trying to do to make sure he doesn't get the stress reaction.
Right.
But we're not going to see that walker that we used to see if he deals with it like that way.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know. Maybe they can, and I'm sure, you know, obviously we're not smarter than they are, but, you know, pull up, you know, they have a one hitter a few years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe pull up that video and then, you know, his last start and, you know, side by side, see what's going on, see if we can spot anything. I don't know.
But like we say, even if the Cardinals had depth, I think it would be very difficult to do anything with Michael Walker. Because you're not going to send him to the minors, I don't think, even if he has options, that's what he should.
Yeah.
You're not going to – I mean, the best thing you can do, and I've put best in quotes, is to find some reason to put him on the disabled list, which, I mean, giving up 6 runs each time out, people would believe that there was something wrong with him. So, because you can't trade him. I mean
– And I think we probably both agree that a move to the bullpen would probably be the worst idea. I think if you're going to do something, you know, getting in some starts at a lower level would be better than – you know, having him pitch every third day for an inning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it's not, you know, it's not a conditioning thing. It's not that he's struggling after 4 or 5 innings.
Right.
You know, it's coming straight out the gate. So,
yeah,
I don't see, you're right, a bullpen issue wouldn't seem to be the case.
Right.
And I know we've talked a lot about Walker, and again, there is no solutions. Let's talk a little bit, and I'm going to spring that on you, so you're not going to be as prepared as you might have been for a walk. But let's talk just a little bit about Carlos Martinez, because since he had the flu or whatever that was that pulled him out, he has really struggled as well. Now, the game on Wednesday, I think it felt like he got maybe a few bad breaks, and he had like one bad – he had that one bad inning and was able to be fairly consistent, fairly well around that inning. So I don't know that I have as much concern about him as I do Walker, but still – a couple of bad starts in a row, you start, you know, getting a little bit concerned with these young guys.
Right, and I think what you just said, Daniel, they're young. And especially Martinez doesn't have, you know, the experience that Walker does. And, I mean, he's going to struggle. I mean, you know, what we saw at the beginning of the season, that's just not realistic for him to continue throughout the season. And you know, he's going to have a rough patch. And, you know, it's been, what, 2 or 3 starts and you know, I'm sure, again, behind the scenes, he's working to fix the issues. And, again, I think, you know, I've seen some talk on Twitter about, you know, bullpens and, you know, all this stuff, and or, you know, sending him to the bullpen. It's too early for that. And he's a young guy. He's learning from his mistakes. And let's have him work through some adversity at the major league level and see how he can handle it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they've got to learn if they're going to be good and effective pitchers going forward, how to get through this. It's, you know, it's not always a bed of roses, unfortunately.
Right.
And we'll see. I know the Dodgers are bringing up their young phenom, and we'll see how he does after he struggles for a little bit. Of course, they have the option of sending him back down. I mean, he's only 19. Okay. That's just wrong. Anyway, all right. And then, you know, like I said, we're to that point. You know, again, you start thinking maybe Mo would start looking for a starter and may have to look for a starter. I know he talked about on Fox's pregame show one time recently about at least considering the 13-man bullpen, you know, or pitching staff, if another turn through the rotation doesn't look much better. Probably with Mike Leake going well last night, with Jaime Garcia making it through seven tonight, maybe that's going to be a less issue. But he still may have to think about making some sort of trade for some sort of veteran starter. And even if he does, I mean, I'm not sure where that starter fits in unless you trade one of these guys out.
Right. And, you know, I feel like in the past couple of years, we've always, you know, said to ourselves that you can't have enough starting pitching. You're kind of referencing the fact that, you know, the Cardinals would always add someone, you know, a triple A pitcher, or, you know, a guy who's, you know, maybe a little older, who has, you know, some quality major league experience. So, you know, I would not be surprised if we see something happen pretty quickly as far as adding a pitcher. Now, it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be someone who steps in and is a number two or a number three, but just to get that depth in case, you know, you do want to send down Waka or Martinez, you know, you have someone you could throw in there for a couple starts.
Yeah, it feels like the days of Jeff Weaver and Kent Bottenfield and the other Duncan reclamation project that came in and then immediately, you know, drank the Cardinal magic water and were awesome. Those days seem to be gone. We saw the Justin Masterson struggles, although John Lackey pitched pretty well for the Cardinals. He's still pitching well no matter. So, yeah, you're right. It's not going to – at best, it's going to be somebody that can take some innings if those guys need a break somewhere along the way. But it's not going to be – there's not going to be a – savior coming in, I don't think, into the rotation and just leading this team on a charge.
And I think you bring up a good point. You know, we kind of got spoiled for a long time with Dave Duncan as the pitching coach. And, you know, not to take anything away, you know, from what's his name?
Lilliquist.
Lilliquist, yes. He's a fine pitching coach. But you know, I think for the longest time we've had quality pitching. And so, maybe his job was a little bit easier. Again, I'm not taking anything away, but you're right. Duncan is missed for sure.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. This is a tangent, but you wonder somewhat about how both Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan would do as we've moved into this sabermetric age, where I feel like some of the pitchers that they picked up, of course, they never would have gotten Jim Edmonds for Kent Bottenfield these days, of course.
Right.
But I mean, even some of the pitchers that they picked up, you know, maybe other teams would be able to see what they saw because of the more data mining and stuff.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. Thankfully we don't have to worry about it. I mean, you know, thankfully they didn't figure it out when Duncan was doing it. Let's put it that way. So,
Right.
All right. Well, I think, you know, we've depressed ourselves enough talking about the pitching staff. So let's talk about more exciting things in the futures report.
0-1 to Pujols. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
All right, John, you have got us another prospect to talk about tonight. I believe you want to talk about Mr. Carson Kelly.
Yes, Daniel. Yeah, he's had a really impressive May with the AA Springfield Cardinals. I believe he's hitting around .310 on the season. And May, it escapes me. Obviously, it's probably around .330, .340 in May. And his OPS in May, I think, is over .900. Now, that's, you know, two home runs. So, you know, his power is not there, but hopefully we're starting to see signs that his bat is turning around. And you know, it's his glove has behind the plate has been a pleasant surprise. You know, last year he won a Gold Glove Award as the best catcher in all of minor league baseball, which was, you know, somewhat surprising, you know, someone new to the position. But, you know, it looks like his bat hopefully is making the turn.
Yeah, I look. I'm pulling it up. May, he's hitting 369 with a 948 OPS.
Yeah.
And yeah, has three home runs on the season too here in May. So, you know, we continue to talk about this guy that's going to come in and fill. I don't know about fill the shoes because that's just not going to happen. But at least take the spot of Yadier Molina whenever Yadier Molina runs down, which may be another decade from now. But still, that doesn't keep us from looking at it. I mean, Carson Kelly seems to be the most likely choice in the system to be that guy, right?
I think so for sure. And I think, you know, I think he kind of gets overlooked a little bit because his offense hasn't quite produced. You know, he first started with Johnson City and he had a pretty strong offensive season and then he struggled a little bit. And you know, he's made the position switch, from third base to behind the plate. But, you know, the Cardinals don't need him to be, you know, 20 to 30 home run hitter, you know, in the past with Molina and, you know, guys before him, it's just handle the pitching staff and we'll take whatever offense we can get. And, you know, I think he's a guy that can totally handle the pitching staff. And, you know, he's got a couple of good mentors in front of him and Molina and Matheny to do that. And so I think, you know, I think he is the guy right now. And, you know, his offense, you know, if it is turning the corner, that's great. But, it, you know, if he can put up decent numbers, I think that's all they would want. And you know, he's a hard worker. His teammates love pitching to him. And I think that's what you can, you know, those are big things for a catcher.
I don't, you know better than I, what's the league difference between the Florida State League and the Texas League? I know the Texas League is a hitter's league. Is Florida State League also, I mean, is I guess what I'm trying to ask is some of this bat improvement do more to the league or to Carson Kelly, I guess?
Yeah, I think I'm going to put it a little more on him. Yeah, the Texas League is more of a hitter's league for sure. The Florida State League has, you know, some big parks down there. But, you know, it's not like we saw it right out of the bat there. He struggled in the first month. I think in April he was around 230 or so, maybe even a little lower. So, yeah, the Texas League, and, you know, and so behind the plate, when he's in a hitter's league, you know, he's going to have to work with these pitchers on, you know, giving up the runs. So, I think it's more on him. He's making adjustments. And what's really interesting is he doesn't strike out. At all. I'm trying to think, and I looked earlier, maybe 13 strikeouts all in May, and I think maybe 17 in April, so 30 strikeouts on the season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I've written in the past about him being a guy that needs to be more aggressive at the plate. You know, maybe he's seeing not enough pitches. He's not striking out, but I don't think he's walking that much. So, being a little bit more aggressive. And if there's a first pitch there, you know, rip it. And, you know, maybe that's something, I haven't looked deep into it for May, but maybe that's something he's doing. But he's definitely got good control of the strike zone. I think he just needs to, you know, I think he maybe is kind of, Jason Hayward was kind of maybe a little bit more the opposite of this, in that he was kind of, you know, had too many walks and not strike out. So he's got good command of the strike zone and as both a hitter and a catcher, really. And so maybe he can, you know, start using that and finding better pitches to hit.
Well, hopefully so. Like I say, there's the catcher spot is, you know, it's just fairly devoid in the system.
Yes. And it's getting better. It's getting better. It is. But yeah, I think he's the next man up for now, for sure.
Who does Memphis have right now? I don't even know. You know, most of those guys ran out, I think, last year.
I know, yeah. I'm trying to think. They had Rosario.
They got Mike Ullman up there.
Ullman, yeah. He's more of an offensive guy, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he might make it up. He might get a call, but I don't see him being a long-term solution. You know, he's a big guy behind the plate, and I don't think – I'm surprised that he's caught so long in the Cardinals system. He hasn't been there long, you know, they got him from Baltimore, but I was thinking that they would try and move him away from behind the plate because he's like 6'6" maybe. And he's strong offensively, but they've kept him there and, you know, they're working with him, I'm guessing, but, He's a pretty nice offensive bat, but I still think Carson Kelly's kind of more of the whole package.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of glancing at Olman's stats here, I'm wondering if it's that he's got a pretty good bat for catcher, but I'm not sure his bat would play other positions, especially because he'd probably have to be a first baseman. And,
right, yeah.
You know, last year in Springfield, he had 12 homers in 100 games, and that's not bad, but especially when you factor in Parks and that league, he just may not be able to carry that much.
Yeah. So
if he can stick at catcher, that's probably his best chance of actually sticking the big leagues.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Alex Reyes hasn't pitched again, right? He should pitch tomorrow?
He went Sunday. Tomorrow. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. So we don't – I figure that's going to be kind of a regular update here because we're going to continue to focus a little bit on him. Anything else?
Yeah, kind of going back to Reyes, for our listeners who may be following his start tomorrow, something to watch is his pitch count. I think that's the big thing. You know, 85 pitches over four innings his last time out. I think watch that more so than the strikeouts. If he can make it through five or six with a nice pitch count, then that's a good sign to see.
Yeah, because like we said, he's got to learn how to pitch, and that's going to be command, and that's going to be able to get some outs maybe instead of a whole lot of 3-2 strikeouts. So.
Yep.
All right. Anything else in the minor leagues that has caught your eye over the last few days?
I don't think so.
All right.
I think we're good to go.
Well, let's then get into our last segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
This week we actually have about three Twitter questions, and most of them are fairly interesting to try to deal with. So let's go ahead and see if we can tackle these.
All right, let's put on a manager hat.
Yeah, well, actually, you're going to have to put on your general manager hat.
Okay.
For most part, right. About every one of them has to
I'll put on
with...
my bow tie.
Yeah,
I'll put
there
on
you
my,
go.
Get
your scarf out and get ready. Okay, our first one comes from Heath Wayman on Twitter, and his predictions on when Alex Reyes or any other prospect might have some big league impact. So basically, who's coming up first, and what are they going to do?
Let's start with Reyes. I think we talked about this last week. I think, barring any major injuries, to the starting rotation. Now, I'm not talking about poor performance because I think we're kind of where we're at with that. But I think, if things stay healthy, I think, maybe around September, he's got to, as we just talked about, got to get that command down. And I wouldn't be surprised if he starts out of the bullpen. Let's see others that could see some time. Last week I talked about Jonathan Rodriguez a little bit. Wouldn't be surprised to see him. Olman maybe. Obviously you have some relievers. Tui Valala could see some time as well. So there's some guys, and it all depends on injuries for sure.
Yeah, it would seem like somebody like Tui Valala or Sokolovic, which.
Yeah.
Depending on what your identification of prospect is, may not necessarily fit Tuli more than Sokolovic. But anyway, those guys, if they did go to a 13-man bullpen, would probably be the ones to most likely get a call.
Yeah.
How that would work, I don't know, because I don't know who you would – I mean, you're obviously – you've got Greg Garcia up there right now for Matt Carpenter. My feeling is somewhat that he may get the stay and they'll cut Tejada, but even so – Peralta is going to be very soon after.
Yeah.
And then once Peralta gets there, I don't see the easiest way of unless I guess you sent him down Hazelbaker, trying to get to 12 hitters. So it seems like they're really not going to want to do that.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Our next question is from MD Norton 1 on Twitter. And his question is, in reality, who is the best trade bait off the major league roster? And his suggestion was that Grichuk would be a very good return. if, I mean, besides the obvious, I mean, it, in reality, it's Matt Carpenter, but Matt Carpenter's not going anywhere.
No.
Out of guys that would at least be in the realm of possibility to trade, who do you think would bring back the most?
I think right now, as far as, yeah, as far as reality, mm-hmm. I think we're still at Matt Adams. You know, Grichuk, I don't know what you could get by, because I feel like the Cardinals would maybe want a solid return for him. But I just don't see think they would get that. Solid defender, but he's going to strike out. You know, he's going to have his issues, with the bat. And I don't know, you know, somebody that would pay a nice, price for that. I think at this moment, you know, Matt Adams probably has, you know, he's playing near his ceiling, maybe, and he might be able to get you something, you know, a quality defender at first, and, you know, he's swinging the bat fairly well. What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Although, you know, I think that the idea that Grichuk can play center field, he has been hitting a little bit better lately, and he does have obvious power. It might be enough to get people to overlook a little bit of a slow start, and just feature that actual overall athletic talent, which Adams, of course, is limited to first base, or if he goes to American League at the DH spot.
Right.
So that might bring back a little bit more. I mean, I think you probably, if you're really one to if you're going to make a move, it's got to be one of those two guys. If you're going to actually get something back, if you're trying to sell high. Now, yeah, most of the other guys that you would think in some regard might have some trade value, like a Waka, or like a Colton Wong, or like somebody else, have been struggling enough that you're really not going to get that return back, because I don't know that they have enough of a track record to make people think that they're going to come back to that level.
Right.
You'd be selling so ridiculously low. So, yeah, I think you're probably right. I think Adams, with the way he's playing and the way he's got his power, and his ability to hit off the bench like you've seen, might bring back. Now, again, that might be the best return. It still may not be a good return. I don't know if that there's anybody that just brings back a huge prospect call.
I don't think so. Someone else that could possibly see some trade value later on, I think, is Johnny Peralta. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got the ability to play short and third. He's got a pretty friendly contract going forward. I don't think he would do anything with that, because, again, he can play short and third for you, and he's got a friendly contract for you, too. So that's something that, you know, I think when they designed his contract, they had in mind, and they had, you know, Diaz coming up, and kind of it's kind of part of their plan, I think, has fallen into place for that aspect. And so he's someone that you know, he's not stuck with his contract.
Well, funny you should say that, because our last question is from Eric B. 1980, and his question is, would you entertain trading Colton Wong or Johnny Peralta for an everyday center fielder? Now, I guess Eric is to the point that he does not believe Grichuk is going to be an everyday guy, and I guess that's somewhat debatable, but definitely reasonable. I think, obviously, like you say, if somebody's going to give you an everyday center fielder for Johnny Peralta, you do it right now.
Right.
Colton Wong, I think that's at least a little bit more hesitation, because there is the potential there, but we're starting to wonder, and I hate to do that so early, but it's been a couple of years now, we start to wonder, you know, are we going to get anything, or at least that much value, of Colton Wong? If you could get a center fielder that was on the young side, you probably would have to at least consider it.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get an everyday center fielder for Colton Wong right now. You know, he's not performing, and he's got a contract that, unless the Red Sox want to, you know, but I think they kind of got burned by that once. You know, I question the wanting a center fielder a little bit. I think, you know, you have a couple other holes you might want to, especially maybe on the arm side of things, to fill before a center fielder, especially because we have some quality depth in the system with Tilson and Pham and Harrison Bader too. You know, Bader's kind of looking like he could potentially be an everyday center fielder, and I don't think we have that big of a hole that we can, you know, that we need to fill it right now. But I don't think you're going to get an everyday center fielder for Wong. And Peralta, he's got to be healthy and he's got to perform, which I kind of want that on our team, mm-hmm. you know. So I don't know about those two.
I think the only thing you could do here, and it's a sad decision to have to make, but if Peralta comes back soon and spends 2 months showing that he still has value, but this team is still middling around 500. At the trading deadline, I think that might be what it'd be the closest thing to a Cardinal sell.
Right.
To try
right.
to bring, prospects in for Johnny Peralta. And I think that's probably the biggest and the most obvious chip, besides a Brandon Moss or a Matt Adams, that might be on that market if the Cardinals are in a, semi-sell mood. I mean, obviously they're not going to tear it all down or anything like that, but, this is right now, looking like one of those rare years where the Cardinals won't be trying to add to their talent.
Right. And, that kind of goes back to our last question about, trade value. And if they're in that situation you just mentioned, somebody else to think about is Trevor Rosenthal. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he can bounce back and be strong, and I don't think the Cardinals are going to pay him what he wants as far as a length of a contract. And so if you're, around 500 and he's pitching well, I think you could get a solid return for him. And especially being that, he's at least right now, you have him as the closer in the future. And if you're not winning games, you don't need a closer. So why not get some quality prospects that I think you could get? Something to think about.
I think that's fair because as I've said before, I think it was a little bit interesting that the Cardinals did not lock him up for any length of time this offseason when, his first year of arbitration rolled around. And you have a stockpiled bullpen. You've got, mm-hmm. Especially for the rest of this year, you could go to O, you could go to Sechrist. Probably not going to go to Broxton to close games, but he can, moving him to the 7th or 8th is not going to probably be a terrible thing for the most part.
Right.
You can fill it for this year and, you hate to say it, but you can always develop another closer most likely.
Right.
Sure. I think that probably is really the true answer to the last question, because people always tend to, we saw what, Ken Giles got this offseason. We saw what Craig Kimbrell brings, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying that, he's going to bring back that, but, if somebody's blowing saves, somebody in the race is blowing saves close to the trade deadline, somebody might get a little anxious.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, that's our Twitter questions for the night. I don't know if there's anything else. We can talk a little bit maybe about Johnny Peralta. He's still on his rehab assignment, but it should be coming back fairly soon. It just seems like right now, like I said, Greg Garcia's kind of caught the rock in a hard place, because even if he could beat out Ruben Tejada, which is not exactly a high bar, he's just not going to be around very long.
And it's a hard situation because, he's performed pretty well when he's been up, and it's, he had a home run tonight, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's a hard thing for them to say, hey, we know you're performing, but you got to go back. I mean, that's, that happened to him earlier in the season, and I think, yeah, you can buy some time if you just release Ruben Tejada. And But there's going to be another problem soon. So he's in a tough spot, and you kind of feel for him a little bit. He's been bouncing back and forth the last couple of years, and he's played well when he's been up.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a solid backup, middle infielder type. Like you said, he did get a home run tonight. He's had a couple of big moments over his career. Mm-hmm. Couple of them have come from being hit with the bases loaded, but hey, you take what you
get. That works.
But you're right. I mean, like I said, I could easily see them now, especially since he's come back and playing well, go ahead and cutting bait on Ruben Tejada, who has not been, I don't know that he's been terrible, but he just hasn't been anything for the most part. But that gives him another week in the big leagues before Johnny Peralta comes up, and then there are no options there. I mean,
right.
Even if they wanted to send Hazel Baker back, I don't think you put another, that's a lot of middle infielders on the roster. So,
yeah.
It is tough for him. And who knows? I mean, that, like you say, you may be a situation where a Peralta gets moved at some point in time, where, you know, Wong gets moved some point in time. But for the most part, it's just a tough situation. Just got an email update. Apparently, Harrison Bader is the hit a home run tonight, and that was the only run that Springfield got or needed. So, hey, you know.
There you go.
Keep an eye out on that guy, as we've talked about him before. He's still doing it. John, anything else you want to hit about? Is there anything that kind of struck you this week, or do you just want to rejoice over the fact that school's out?
Yes, it is. It's, and we got, I don't have to set an alarm for about 2 months. It's a nice little break for sure. You know, I think it'd be nice to take the next couple in Washington and you know, get some momentum going. We just, you know, it's up and down, and that's how the season's been. It's been a really odd start to the season, I feel like, with, you know, the offense carrying the pitching and you know, not being able to get on any runs. So hopefully, you know, some things can change. And, you know, we have the draft coming up too. That'll be, I know we'll be talking about that soon. So that'll be something to keep our eye on as well.
Absolutely. I was about to mention that this next week, I believe we are going to do an expanded version of the futures report. We're going to, you know, toss the up the middle. We'll put them all together. And John's going to give us a little bit of a preview of the draft. The Cardinals have a lot of draft picks this year.
Yep.
And it's just going to be very interesting. And I'm sure this is right in John's wheelhouse. So I'm just going to, you know, probably, I may not even show up next time. I may just let John do it all, you know, and it'll just be easier that way. So,
yeah.
I think, you know, the Cardinals get the two games. They got two more games with the Nationals. They've got three with the Brewers in Milwaukee, a team that they should be able to at least win two out of three against and hopefully sweep. If you could somehow win, you know, four of the next five, you know, maybe that's something. But you're still, I mean, the Cardinals 8 games behind the Cubs as it stands right now. And the Cubs, you know, a little bit mortal, but, you know, when they come in and take two out of three every time, it becomes difficult to make up any ground.
Yep.
All righty. Well, we'll be at you hopefully next week. And like I said, John will do a good preview of the draft, and that should be really, really interesting. So until then, for John Nagel, I'm Daniel Shoptaw. Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.